We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time. Welcome to the show. The Hornets just completed a 1-2 week. Beating Cleveland, not being able to hold on and take out Indiana after stretching the game to overtime, and having a respectable showing versus Oklahoma City, but ultimately losing. Tonight, the All-Star game is going on, and there are no Hornets represented, as none of the Hornets were represented at any point this weekend. Michael, you've actually been down in Orlando attending a lot of these All-Star events. How was the weekend? Are you excited?
Yeah, I mean, it was good. And I will point out, did have one Hornets person there. Our owner, David Stern, was actually very prominent in this All-Star festivities. And I don't know if anybody watched the press conference yesterday, but actually got to his old smug and pretty funny self when Chris Sheridan tried to attack him on the Chris Paul trade. And he just merely pointed out, as only Stern can, that he knew what he was doing, and it wasn't the conspiracy theory most thought. And with all the skills competitions and the horrible dunk contest, that was actually my favorite moment of the entire All-Star weekend.
Horrible dunk contest. Jeremy Evans doesn't do it for you, huh?
No. I mean, when his first dunk got a zero by Andre Iguodala, who took the 10 sign and folded the 1 in. No, I don't know how that guy won. But,
Chase Budinger.
Yeah, no, I thought the Billy Hoyle White Man Can't Dunk tribute was good and apropos, and if they do remake that movie, I wouldn't mind him starring in it as Billy Hoyle, but no, it was just Lex star power. I mean, he had the three-point contest with Kevin Durant and Kevin Love and, you know, stars in the three-point contest and scrubs in the dunk contest. Things are definitely backwards.
Yeah. Although I gotta say, I mean, three-point contest is always, just for some reason, I like that thing the most, even though I understand myself it can be really boring at times. I kind of like just pure shooting displays. So
yeah,
that wasn't that bad.
No, that's fine, but I mean, they used to be won by guys like Craig Hodges and Tim Legler and the sorts. I mean, that was supposed to be a warm-up to whet your appetite for the Michael Jordan versus Dominique Dunkoff, or, you know, and now we're talking Paul George versus Chase Budinger.
I don't know. At its inception, Larry Bird winning all of those three-point contests.
He won a couple.
Not a couple. 20 years ago, or 25 years ago. Not a big deal, right?
Yeah, yeah. but no, I mean, it was a fairly interesting week, but I think the most interesting thing at All-Star Weekend was just, you know, David Stern answering the questions, not only about New Orleans, but the possible sales of the Sacramento franchise, and you've got Seattle making a bid, kind of playing the mistress card and just trying to lure over any franchise that might be having a little bit of trouble in its current marriage. So
I guess we should talk about that then, of course, and everybody's interested in it. It's the potential sale of the Hornets to a group of guys who are, from what I understand, somewhat leveraged. Mike Dunleavy is kind of the face of this group. He is the one doing a lot of the negotiating. Mike Dunleavy, of course, was a GM and a coach for the Clippers. He's been a coach in the past before. He's never done that great of a job when he's had a GM role, in my opinion, so that makes me a little worried. I hope Del Demps keeps his job. But behind the scenes, a lot of the money is a guy named Raj Batal. I always say it wrong. And Benson's brother, who is Benson is the owner of the New Orleans Saints and has all kinds of business interests downtown, right around the arena, which makes a lot of sense for him to be involved in some sort of part ownership with the Hornets. Those three groups are the three primary names mentioned in that ownership group. So do you have any red flags about this that makes you worried, makes you think they might not end up staying in New Orleans? I mean, it doesn't worry me that much.
No, well, remember, essentially what Stern said is that group is in the lead, and, there's another group still getting things together. And remember the last time, an L.A. group was in the lead with David Stern in control of the Hornets? He leveraged that, kind of pulled the rug out from under him and got a better deal. But in all seriousness, I mean, he said that, the second group headed up by Gary Schwess is still very much in it and they're putting things together, but that he hopes to, he hopes to finalize things within the next week or two. But what I found really interesting is it's kind of after all the big lights of the NBA TV cameras were shut off. Stern held kind of a smaller little conference with, I would say there's about 7 to 10 of us there, and just got to talk to him a little bit about exactly what's going on. And he said that in all honesty, this thing would be done by now, but Mardi Gras of all things kind of slowed the process down. And how the city, he said, his exact quote was something along the lines of, I've seen cities shut down before, but nothing quite to the extent of New Orleans and Mardi Gras. And he said it with, this look on his face, like he just couldn't believe that the whole city just kind of goes all in on this, on the prospect of this party, like, something that David Stern couldn't or wouldn't be involved in. But he honestly said that slowed it down a little bit. And now that's over, things are moving along, and specifically said that it's going to get done before the legislative session, which was March 12th. But he was adamant about, not to discount that second group. And it's going to be one of those two groups, and it's going to be relatively soon. And to answer your question, no, I don't think there's any worry about, that New Orleans fans should be worried that this team is on its way out. And to answer your worry, I don't think that there's any fear of Dunleavy coming in. He said that he wouldn't want any kind of executive or GM role. And to be quite honest, I don't know how you feel, but if I had to rank all the assets that the Hornets have right now, players, everything included, I would say that Del Demps and Monty are 1 and 2. So I would pray to God that whoever comes in doesn't mess that up.
Yeah. I don't know. Their own draft pick might be higher than either of them, but other than that, yeah. So, basically I lay out my opinions of these two ownership groups. I mean, of course I don't know a lot of the behind the scenes stuff. and they're more my worries than anything else, and that's just me. And yeah, one of them, of course, is Mike Dunleavy. He does like to make power plays. So, I mean, even though he says right now, I don't want any part in the front office of this. I just want to be, you know, like the front man or maybe like the president. It does worry me a little bit that at some point he'll just be like, I can do a better job than that and step in. And I think Demps has had enough interference already in what he's trying to do. The other group, which is Gary Schwest's group, so this is just my take. Schwest strikes me as an extremely conservative businessman. And you can't, I mean, even if you go online, you cannot find much more than like a local hometown newspaper interview with Gary Schwest. He's extremely private. He does not like the media. And he's also extremely conservative. And so it kind of worries me that he will try to maximize profit on the Hornets, and do you have like any of the sense here that I'm a little worried that he might not be willing to spend all that much?
See, I don't know. I think 99% of owners or potential owners are the same, and there's only one or two Mark Cuban types out there. I mean, even the Lakers, yeah, they traded Lamar Odom because he was, you know, slightly unhappy, but It was a cost-cutting move, too, and they would love to cut costs in other areas. I mean, this idea that there's just a bunch of teams out there that'll spend willy-nilly is kind of a myth. I mean, it's not going to happen, and I don't even think Cuban's going to be the type that does it when these new new Lux tax penalties are put in. So I don't really think any owner money-wise is going to be different. I think if a team is successful, and we even saw this with the very frugal George Shin, if they have a window to be successful and win a title, I think most owners, you know, spend the money, and if they don't, they don't. I mean, do you really think that Donald Sterling, who's maybe the worst and cheapest owner in the history of the NBA, isn't going to shell out max money for Blake and Chris Paul? I mean, if you have the right players, I think most owners are going to spend it. If you don't, you know, they're not going to, you know, some owners will not spend more money to win 48 games instead of 44. But honestly, I don't really care about that.
Okay. Yeah, and I was talking with Jason about this just a little bit, and he's actually a little bit excited about that. And it's his term, maximize profit, that he thinks that Schwest would just want to make sure that the team's good enough to make it to the playoffs every year and be decent. And maybe he won't go the extra mile to sign people way over, you know, luxury tax to make sure that he, you know, just to buy a championship. But he's pretty excited by the idea of somebody who's just, you know, he'll try to keep the best product he can on the floor because that's how you make money in the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, you think of a team like, remember Utah a couple years ago, they traded like Ronnie Brewer. And I think they even gave away Eric Maynor a couple years later. And these moves were to get under the luxury tax. Yeah, you might see moves like that from a cheaper owner, but really, were those Utah teams going to win the title with Ronnie Brewer or with, you know, was Eric Maynor that big of a difference? Either you're a team that could win a title or you're not. And if you're not, I don't really care if my owner is dumping a couple million dollars, you know, here and there. Mm.
Okay, so moving on from the ownership situation, we have a whole lot of pieces going up recently about the draft, about trades. So next week, we're going to be doing a trade extravaganza, because, of course, for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be, you know, hearing every kind of rumor under the sun about probably most of our team. The only name I would be surprised to see in a trade rumor is Gustavo Ayon.
Gustavo!
So next week we are going to have a trade extravaganza. So if any of you have a trade that you absolutely love that you want us to consider, we'll pull out a couple of them and talk about them. If you send us any trades that involves the Hornets receiving Dwight Howard or any other superstar for trash, We might even pull that out, too, so we can mock you. So if you want to get mocked, you feel free to send it to us. You can send it to Ryan at Hornets247.com or Michael, which email you want them to use for you?
McNamara, my last name, Hornets247 at Yahoo.com.
Yeah. So we'll take a look at those trades, and we'll get some of them out there.
And I want to see some creativity. I mean, I think Landry and Kamen for expiring player X and a first-round pick. Okay, I think we could all come up with those, and I know that'll probably be the realistic one, but I want to see some trades involving somebody like Ariza. What do people think he's worth? You know, or even some trades where maybe we take on a player with multiple years. I want to see something a little bit more creative than you know the stuff that we see everywhere else, and you know, is honestly more likely to happen. But I know there's a lot of creative GMs out there.
So now that we've addressed that, we kind of just didn't even talk about the three games immediately, okay. Which it is kind of crazy. There were three games actually before this weekend, and it just seems like so long ago.
Yeah, the back-to-back-to-back, the first and hopefully the last in New Orleans Hornets history.
And you thought we were going to lose them all. I predicted 1-2, though. I didn't pick the right team that we were going to beat. Was there anything during that three-game stretch that stuck out that you wanted to talk about?
I guess I'll start with other teams' players first. Roy Hibbert. I'm a Georgetown fan who watched practically every Georgetown game over the last couple of years, watched Hibbert a lot. I thought he would be a solid backup center in the league, but he just absolutely took over that game and scored in a multitude of ways, and I'm just wondering if Indiana is going to regret not making him a better offer, this year, because I think he hits restricted free agency, and I think people kind of throw the same money and clear the same kind of room, and as we saw for Marc Gasol this summer, and I think Indiana is going to be forced to give him the max or pretty close to it.
So really, you think that? So I mean, don't get me wrong, his game, he had a really good game, but don't you think part of that was the fact he was either being guarded by Chris Kamen, or I mean, every once in a while Ione, otherwise Solomon Jones. Solomon Jones played 25 minutes in that game.
Yeah, no, I understand, but that I think that's the point, is that there's so few centers out there, and even fewer good young centers, that, as people who have defended the Emeka contract for the last 2 years have stated, if you're going to overpay one position, you're going to overpay center, and Hibbert at least showing that he has the potential to do things like that, and you really look out on the landscape, and even the upcoming drafts, I mean, Andre Drummond might be a center. I think he's going to be more of a power forward in the league. But if you're looking at a center in this upcoming draft, you're hedging your bets on a couple of white American-born, kind of thin as a rail guys. That hasn't played out so well with the B.J. Mullins and the Cole Aldrichs of the world. So there's not many coming down the pipeline. There's not many out there. And yeah, a guy who could put up 30 and 13 in a game like that. I just think Hibbert's going to get paid. That was the main thing going through my mind in that game, along with, oh my God, Trevor Ariza is back. And then, and then the following night, the Hornets win. He just absolutely disappears. But I remember.
Well, he literally disappeared. He didn't play the second half. Like, he played like a few minutes in the third, and that was gone.
Well,
he's done.
I mean, Monty had said before this back-to-back-to-back started that he wanted to keep the starters' minutes in the low 30s, and in that Indiana game, he was forced to play Trevor 43 minutes. But, I mean, right after that game, in my recap, I put up Ariza's numbers for February up against Luol Deng's for the season, and, you know, they were practically identical, and it just makes you wonder if Ariza really could be the guy to lock down that spot for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I did want to say one thing. I saw someone making some sort of smart-ass remark about, oh, I'm glad the Hornets traded Darren Collison after the game with his 18-6.
That were padded because going into the fourth quarter. Okay, but go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. He was not that impressive. But remind everybody, he was traded for Ariza, who was 21-5. I mean, it's a wash here, people.
Right.
At worst.
He was traded for Ariza and the fact that we don't have to watch James Posey eating double cheeseburgers on the sideline this season.
Right. Because I will remind you, Posey still would be under contract this year. I mean, the Indiana Pacers had to pay him to go away.
But yeah, no, I mean, Collison didn't impress me at all. And honestly, at halftime when Kamen was having a decent game up to that point, I had tweeted out looking for Indiana fans asking what they would trade for Kamen, and almost universally every tweet was saying, "Will you please take Darren Collison back?" I mean, the Indiana fans do not like him at all, and they're just counting down the minutes until George Hill comes back. And Collison reached his peak, and it's just funny, and just something that, you know, I hope everybody keeps in mind is I'm so sick when you see young guys play and people say, well, he's doing this now, he's obviously going to be better in the future. And you hear this about Jeremy Lin, as if everybody just magically improves, you know, the more they get experience in the league. It's not true. Collison came in and he was impressive because he had opportunity, had played 4 years in college. But I told everybody who listened that Drew Holiday would be better, you know, down the line, and it's come to fruition. And young guys just don't automatically get better in every single area. Sometimes they just flatline.
So, I mean, and here's my question for you. I have a feeling how you'll I think I know how you'll answer it, but so 2 year contracts you have to hand out. You have to get yourself a point guard for 2 years. And you have your options are Darren Collison, Jarrett Jack, and Grievous Vasquez. Which one are you going after the strongest?
Now, what kind of team am I?
You're the Hornets. Let's say Jack's expired. The Hornets have the exact same team they have right now, plus, say, Anthony Davis, because I like to imagine that. And their point guard is the one hole they don't have. Vasquez, they can pick up. They can pick up Jarrett Jack for longer, or they can get Darren Collison.
I think out of those three, I would take Jack. And I know there's a growing movement on the site of people who just absolutely hate Jarrett Jack and love to point out how when he doesn't play, the Hornets win, as if that's the only causation correlation. But I think out of those three, I'm not happy with any of them. I would be looking all season to try to find an upgrade. But at least with Jack, I have a guy with some leadership experience and a guy that I wouldn't mind taking the shot if, say, Eric Gordon was in foul trouble or hurt, which is probably more realistic, in the fourth quarter of a game. So I guess I would say Jack 1, Collison 2, and Vasquez 3.
And, you know, I mean, I would actually still probably take Collison over Jack. But the difference, I mean, there isn't any really. I mean, I could flip a coin and end up with Jarrett Jack just as happily.
Yeah, I mean,
so
yeah, I mean, Collison had a decent game, but the Vasquez Jack combo combined for 29 points, 8 assists, and 9 rebounds. I mean, and they shot nearly 50%. That's not a bad combo. And just something I want to ask you, you know, if you want to take back, a couple weeks ago, you basically equated Vasquez's outside shooting with that of Rajon Rondo. Do you still think it's that bad, or is he at least an average shooting point guard?
I said that so far, that's all he'd been showing us. His career, he's a 30% shooter from three. So, no, he's not bad as Rondo. Rondo is like, what, 18%? But he's Ariza level. I mean,
right.
I when he takes a three, I don't have any confidence. But he's not unsupportable as a three-point. I mean, Michael Jordan's career three-point shooting percentage was, what, 33%?
And that's where Vasquez is at this year.
And right. So, I mean, it's you don't want to murder yourself when he takes the shot, but neither are you happy that he's
I don't think anybody's going to play 8 to 10 feet off him the way they do Rondo. No.
Correct. Yeah, I agree.
He's not great, but I think he's at least a guy that, that teams are threatened by, and they're not always going to go under the screen, you know.
And when he gets his feet set, he's fine from downtown. It's just, you know, he only takes 2 a game. I mean, big deal.
How did you feel? So, you know, like you said, in that game, Ariza really didn't play in the second half. Another chance for Aminu to snatch minutes. And he only earned 16 in that Cleveland game and really just zeros across the bottom. I mean, for a guy whose strength is rebounding, didn't even grab a rebound in that game. Any optimism? But I mean, you did have one good game this week, that OKC game.
I'm ready to sell on Aminu. Anything you can get. I mean, otherwise you're going to end up with him like Julian Wright, where, you know, we ended up trading him for piddly squat, and we're happy with it. So if you can find anybody who is willing to offer anything for Aminu, find it.
You got Bellinelli for the one who you called Juju.
Yeah, I know.
No.
I guess that was another very good trade,
wasn't
it?
Yeah, I mean, scraps for better scraps, but...
right.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing about this week is Chris Kamen just having no fear whatsoever, no moral compass. You know, the Hornets are trying to give young guys minutes and shots. They got, you know, a rookie that everybody loves in Ion, and Kamen just doesn't care. He's going to take his shots, and he's going to go home. And
the last 5 games, he is taking 18.2 shots per game, shooting 36% from the floor for 16 points.
And how many free throws per game is he averaging?
He's getting 3.8 free throws per game for a center, a 7-foot center.
But that's almost double what he's averaging on the season.
I
mean, every time he has a good game, I read the comments, and people are really starting to postulate over whether Kamen could be the center of the future on this team, and whether, you know, we should look to move Okafor instead. But I just there's not enough there, and that Indiana game was all I needed to see. Played 39 minutes and got 2 rebounds and just was manhandled in the painted area by Hibbert. And every time the Hornets came out of there with a rebound, I felt it was due to some sort of luck, either, you know, a tip out or you know, the ball just bouncing right to a guy. I mean, Indiana just dominated the boards in those last couple minutes.
Yeah. And I will say, the Indiana game for Ione was – David West did a really good job with Ione. He basically kind of overpowered him for a lot of the game, and it was only when West was being shifted off where Ione ever broke free and did anything. It's basically 2 guys with pretty high fundamentals, and West's experience just carried him through that.
Yeah,
I still love Ione, and holy crap, in Cleveland, that game was a clinic for Ione. They were actually, in the fourth quarter, they were running Ione on cuts to the basket as a decoy, and the entire Cleveland team was jumping at him. It was like, what the hell is going on
here?
It
was funny. I was text messaging with a buddy who was at the game, hadn't watched Ion all year. And he, you know, at the beginning I said, just watch out for this guy. And he would text me back, oh, that was a nice pass. And, you know, but I still got to see more. And then a little later he'd come up by the end of it. He was completely sold on Ion, you know, wanted to know everything about where the guy came from. And yeah, I think that's been everybody's experience. I mean, I was going to talk about this a little later, but I played some pickup ball while I was down at All-Star Weekend with some of the ESPN guys. And after one of the games, I just pulled David Thorpe aside and I said, you know, I love your columns. I wanted to let you know that. But if you don't put Ion up higher in the rookie rankings, there will be a riot at your door, and it will be from New Orleans fans. And he got, I think he thought I was serious, got a little flustered. He said, I had him up, this week he's in the top 15, is it? And then he just started saying it's just because he wasn't getting enough minutes, and I couldn't put him up there because he's got enough minutes. But even he loved his game, and he just said, you know, he's out in Europe a lot, and you know, a lot of these international countries. And he said that, you know, the guys out there would absolutely dominate most, you know, ends of the benches on NBA teams. And it's just, you know, it's just perplexing to him why those guys don't get more of an opportunity. And, you know, I just got to give Demps props for getting Ion. And I can't wait to get excited about the next version of Gustavo next year, because, you know, Demps isn't going to stop looking.
Right. I mean, and you can see that in the NBA. Pekovic. He was a starter. He was a star in Europe. And he's playing. I mean, he's not going to continue what he's doing in Minnesota the way he is, but he's a legitimate starting center. And Ion, I'm much more closer to him saying he's a legitimate starting power forward every game I see him play. I mean, these guys are available over there, and especially, I have a feeling, especially as far as big men, because their big men in Europe are actually required to develop some of the fundamental mid-range kind of games, passing off of cuts, just the way the European game is. And so I think our, you know, your basic, the advantage Americans have over the European players are their guards and swingmen are just amazing compared to a lot of what the Europeans show up with. Although, of course, then you see players like Rubio. But I don't know. I'm so excited with Ion. That 17 rebounds, he was freaking all over
the
place.
Well, yeah,
boards.
I mean, the 17, but to me, the best number was, and I mean, you've said this pretty much all season with his passes, right idea, just wrong execution. He had zero turnovers in that game. And that's mm-hmm. a game where, you know, the starting center had four, Vasquez had six. It was brutal in spots, but it just, so I guess I'll ask you, Kamen is not long for New Orleans. I still think they would move Okafor in the right deal. With that being said, he is, let's say we go into the future with Ion being the, you know, the power forward of the future, the guy that's going to start. He's the Hornets' Luis Scola, essentially. What type of center, ideally, would you put next to him?
I think you need to have a scoring center. I mean,
give me.
Oh no, I think it's definitely inside. I think Ion's best suited to playing in the high post, where you can place him there, pass off of cuts, and he's just incredibly good at flashing to the high post and dropping touch passes, either back out to a wing shooter or into the post. And I'm about halfway done with creating my Ion video. And I think I'm going to have about a minute at the end, which is going to be called the WTF Cayman section, because it's just these incredible little drop bounce passes where he just redirects the ball. He touches it, redirects it. They're bounce passes, and they hit Cayman in the hands or the chest, and Cayman sputters and kind of fumbles around and either loses the ball or doesn't realize he's in scoring position, and he kind of does a fadeaway. It's just like... Yeah. If at this point you should be expecting these passes, man. Just put it up. So, he passed it to you in a great spot.
So a scoring low post center. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's probably the best option. I don't see Ion as an amazing post low post scorer, do you? He's got some moves, but he's not amazing.
No, but I mean I could see him with a Tyson Chandler type who they could play high post, low post, you know, with Ion making nice lob. I mean, that's the one thing is we don't have enough athletic players. I wonder if his passing skills translate to the high, low lob, you know, things of that nature. So, I mean, as far as centers that might be on the market this summer, either via free agency or trade, I know the guy is hurt all the time, but somebody like Andrew Bogut, you know, would be somebody that I would target that I...
Absolutely. I think Bogut would be, if you can keep him from having these freak injuries, would be an amazing next time.
I think that's the type of guy I would target too.
So, I wanted, you keep saying, Okafor is there's no way the Hornets are getting rid of him. There's no trade that will ever get anything worth anything back. So I was just thinking about this the other day. you keep bringing up like the Calderon trade and stuff like that, and Calderon's actually getting a lot of interest around the league as one of those people that people are going to trade for. But if you were contacted by Toronto and they said that they wanted to do the Calderon for Okafor kind of trade, but they required Grievous Vasquez to replace Calderon as their starting point guard, is Vasquez enough for you now, like high enough in your esteem where you're saying no to that?
Oh, no chance. No, I don't. I mean, I think we like all these guys now, but we got to take a step back and realize there were certain bench guys and fringe players that we loved 3 years ago. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I mean, not to be callous or cold, but at the end of the day, all those guys are replaceable, and it's honestly not that difficult. There's a handful of guys that you want to get your hands on and build your team around. Everybody else is just, some form of a lower asset. And no, Vasquez, Henry, Aminu. I mean, you could go almost up and down the entire roster. Bellinelli's having a nice run. If he could help me get rid of Okafor to create more flexibility to go after, I don't know. I've sat down and looked at it. I was talking with somebody about this today. I don't even know if there's more than five franchise players, because I love somebody like Kevin Love, but honestly, I don't think he could be the number one guy on a championship team. So anyway, about five franchise players, another 45 guys that are different than anybody else in the league. They're in like that second tier. And then after that, everybody else is just some form of a lower commodity. So no, if Vasquez could help me shed Okafor a year earlier and give me the chance to get into that 2013 free agent market, he's got to go.
All right. You heard it here. Vasquez is going the door to make Okafor leave.
Well, no, I mean, we just talked about it, though. I mean, do you disagree? Because we just talked about how Ion came out of nowhere, how there's tons of international prospects that could come in and do, just as well as 8th, 9th. I just really think there's not much of a difference between, guys like Vasquez and guys who are excelling in the D League or in Europe with the right coaching and right fund. I don't think there's a huge enough difference there to hold on to them if they could really help you out. I mean, do you think there's a big enough difference between Vasquez and whoever Monty could swindle next for a decent backup point guard?
No, I mean, here's absolutely not. And here's my entire take on it. One of the comments we get to see frequently is, Gustavo Ayón early on is our third big man of the future. And, Vasquez is our backup point guard of the future. You don't plan a team and slot people into those spots. The way you build a team is you try to get those top-tier starter and caliber players, and you move everything you can on your team to get them. You never hold on to a guy. In my world, yes, Grievous Vasquez is probably going to be, for the next 5 years, one of the best backup point guards in the league. But if I can get a starting small forward, I don't care. He's going out the door to get that guy.
Right, yeah. And, Miami found their – you look at Miami's two point guards. One was a second-round pick, and the other one was late first. I mean, you could find them if you get the stars to take the pressure off of certain guys. So, yeah, I mean, if the Hornets have a chance to get those top-tier guys, that's really all that I worry about, and everything else is really just to keep us entertained and our minds occupied in the meantime until we get Anthony Davis.
Yeah. And I will say this, too. If you had asked me the question back in 2004, 2005, if Dan Dickow was a prime backup point guard in the NBA for the next 5-10 years, I would have said yes, absolutely.
I know. And, I mean, there's a handful of guys that I think if we really took our time, we could think about that we get attached to in the short term. And then now, look, Denver is dying to unload themselves of Birdman because Kenneth Fariad comes behind him, is 10 years younger or whatever, and is doing 5 times better job and now they're stuck with the contract because they thought they had this tremendous energy role player. And really, those guys just come along every single year. So never get attached to those mid to lower level guys. That's advice.
Yeah. So my last question for you, are there any players on this roster that you would deem untouchable?
No, I think Gustavo is the one that just because of his value.
Because of his contract,
because,
right?
Because of his contract and where he's kind of at, he would be the one that I don't think that we would get enough for in a trade. I don't think mm-hmm. another team would value him enough to give up a better piece. But no, untouchable, no. I mean, I really don't think there's anybody on this team that has multiple All-Star or Hall of Fame potential. And to me, those are the kind of guys that win championships, so everybody else is kind of replaceable in some ways, and gotta get Anthony Davis. So as long as there's any chance of getting him, everybody, I mean, I'll do a New Orleans Saints for Ricky Williams type of trade where just you could have the entire roster, picks, maybe even future picks for that guy. So nobody's untouchable.
All right, so looking for the future. For the next week, we have actually 4 games and 5 nights. We're going to be at Chicago Tuesday, then at home versus Toronto, home versus Dallas on Friday, and Saturday Indiana comes back to visit us in our Vengeance game. So that's pretty tough. 4 games and 5 nights is never anything you really want to see. And starting off it with Chicago, which of these 4 games, you have one that you want to talk about?
I think the Toronto game could be a little interesting, only because I think that their coach and Monty have some similar philosophies. Monty just has guys on his team that somewhat fit his philosophy, where Toronto does not have anybody that fits, you know, Dwayne Casey's philosophy. I mean, they have a soft outside shooting center. They've got an exciting wing player in DeRozan who, you know, really doesn't play any defense. They have a European point guard. I mean, I think ideally he would love to slow the game down and, you know, kind of play inside out and play tougher defense, but isn't able to do that. And the reason that interests me is because the Hornets do have 2 guys on their roster that I think would be very appealing to Toronto, and Okafor and Ariza. And, you know, I guess I think of a lot of these games with other teams as showcase games because, I mean, I don't know if it's you, but it's got to kind of swing, if you agree with me on this, but don't you think it swings general manager and coaches' opinions, you know, when a certain guy does well against them, or do you think they don't look at that at all? I mean,
actually, I think it's absolutely certain, because every single time, not every single time, but I have multiple times heard GMs ask questions about particular players, and the first things out of their mouth is, oh, he destroyed us last time
right.
we played him. And that's, I mean, it's just first impressions do matter, and they matter in basketball. And if GMs, they don't watch every single game, and they are watching their team a lot, and so they don't see the other teams play as much as they probably should. They're relying on their scouts to do that. But in the end, they're still the one who has to make the decision. So their scout can go to them and say, Andrea Bargnani only rebounds, you know, when the ball falls on his head and there's no other person within 15 feet of it. But if you watched a game where Andre Bargnani ripped 2 balls away from Okafor and had a 10-rebound game, I mean, well, then, you know, that's probably going to stick in his head and think, hey, Andre Bargnani can rebound.
I think if I saw Bargnani rip 2 balls off of Okafor, that would stick in my head as well.
It's true. Bargnani is probably like the least likely person to ever surprise anyone when it comes to rebounding.
Grabbing their balls, right.
So anyways, so do you think the Hornets are going to beat Toronto? Or are you just excited in the hopes that maybe we can convince them to give us Jose Calderon and who Ed Davis For Ariza and
I think Okafor? Ariza is a guy that they would be terribly interested in. I think the only thing that might beat him to it is I know Dallas is trying to dump long-term contracts and a push for Darren and Dwight Howard this summer. And I think, they might just give Sean Marion away to Toronto. But I think somebody like Ariza, I really think if Ariza gets traded this year, it would be either to Toronto or a team like Golden State where Mike Malone is at and they're looking to, to get some a defensive leader and wing player on their team. So I think that game will be interesting. Yeah, I think that's the game that the Hornets win this week. And I'm hoping it could be a showcase game of sorts for some veterans that, might have to part way with while the younger crew comes in.
Yeah. So the team I'm going to pick to talk about is Dallas. Now I'm sure you remember this. Beginning of the year, I did the Dallas is dead yep. thing, and I pretty much said, okay, they're finally finished. The old people are finally old enough that they're finished. But yeah, I was wrong.
Yep, and I think I told. I think my thing is that you're such a prisoner of the moment. I told you.
I don't know. I mean, I always expected Dirk was going to come back and play better than he was early in the season. But when the hell is Jason Terry and Jason Kidd going to die? I mean, I guess Kidd is kind of dying at this point. I mean, his numbers, he's 5 points and 5 rebounds and 5 assists a game, which isn't terrible in 28 minutes. But, I mean, this team has so many old people. But, he's like, even though he's cutting costs, he's still buying all of those. Basically, if you went down to John Hollinger's little list of players and you looked at all the low-minute, high-production guys that just aren't getting minutes on a team, you'll find them at the end of Dallas's roster. They identify them, they go out and get them, and then they actually give them some minutes. They've got Mahimi, they've got Brandon Wright. I mean, those guys are guys who, like, for years... Everybody's always said, if they get a moment, they're going to be great. Delonte West was one of those. Like, when they're playing, and Delonte West's head is screwed on straight, he's extremely efficient. And they go out and get them. And they get so many of them that, you know, if I buy 3 of them and only, you know, one of them pans out, that's still great. I mean, Brian Cardinal's been a guy like that for a long time. And, I mean, he might have a PER of 2.2 this year, but previously he's had some pretty nice years.
Yeah, and... I don't think they're that hard to identify. I mean, if you look, not to keep beating my own chest, but 2 years ago, the number one realistic free agent target on my list in the offseason was Mahinmi. And then this past year, even though you laughed at me, I said that the Hornets should target Brandon Wright and even Ejion Leon, you know, as they get young guys some minutes. I don't think it's that hard to identify the guys who could come in and fill a minor role. I mean, basically what you do is you find a prospect that was highly touted coming out of college but asked to do too much, and then you just bring them in and ask them to do far less, give them a smaller role, and then it pays off. I mean, Brandon Wright has a 20 PER this year, and the team is just full of guys like that. Now, once the postseason hits and teams have more rest in between games, you know, I don't think this success continues for Dallas, but by then they could actually have the real Lamar Odom back instead of this imposter, and that might make up for the, you know, some of the other guys.
All right, so what's your prediction for this week? How many games are we winning in this this stretch of insanity?
I say 2-2. I really think that I think the Hornets outplayed Indiana. Even before that game, I told the bettors on our site to take the over, which I knew was a lock, and then the Hornets to win that game. I think that's a matchup. I think Hibbert had, you know, one of his better games. I don't think he repeats that on the road. His home stats are much better than his road stats. So I think they beat Toronto and Indiana. How about you?
I'm only going 1-3. If Indiana and Dallas were swapped, so Indiana was on the front of that back-to-back. I might be tempted, but Indiana, I think we could beat Indiana, which is crazy. I mean, the Hornets are the worst team in the West, and we're saying, basically sitting here saying, the Hornets with this injury depleted roster can almost match up with, what are they, the fifth seed?
Right.
In the East, and I don't even necessarily think this is wrong. I think the Hornets can match up with a lot of the middle teams in the East. But I just think that fourth game or the fourth game in the fifth night is just too much. The Hornets aren't going to take Indiana. So I think Toronto. I think they'll go in and take Toronto, and we'll hopefully see all of them drooling over Ariza. Maybe we can will Ariza into another one of those 25-5-5 games that he's been putting up periodically.
Well, yeah, and that four-game stretch might get Hornets fans down, but I got four that'll get them excited really quick. I'll just say at Clippers, at Lakers, at Suns, at Portland, four games in I guess that's six nights, couple back-to-backs there, but that's Minnesota's schedule for this upcoming week. Four straight road games, starting with the Clippers late. I mean, we could easily see a four-game losing streak and the beginning of the Timberwolves' fall. So, something to get excited about.
It's March when you were when you said they're going to get destroyed.
They got those four, then they go home for a little while to lick their paws, and then they got a nice 12 out of 13 road streak starting March 12th. So, I like it.
All right, so thanks, everybody, for listening in the know. Remember to send in those trade ideas you want us to address. And, Mike, you got anything else?
No, just be creative.
Have a good night, everybody. Listen, the phone tone really each and every day.